ours will be forever the method.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk about the history of bodybuilding and we talk to the legends of bodybuilding. And I am your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we are going to have one of our favorite guests on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, Mr. Jerry Branum. Jerry was a writer for Muscle and Fitness magazine, and he was also a writer for Iron Man magazine for many years. And Jerry has a long history in the sport. He's been out in California since the 1960s, and he was friends with Arnold Schwarzenegger, Frank Zane, and many of the top guys. He's always got a lot of stories. So at the end of every year, Jerry and I get together and we talk about competitions. We don't talk about the year in review like a lot of podcasts do. We go back 50 years, 40 years, 30 years because we're talking about the history of bodybuilding. So we are doing it again this year. I think this is probably our third year, at least, maybe our fourth, that we've done this, and everybody seems to enjoy it. I enjoy talking to Jerry, and he likes it too. So this year, we are going to start off going back 50 years to 1971, and we are going to, it's a two-part interview, of course, because we had a lot of stuff to cover. So today will be part one of 1971 in review. And on this part of the show, we are going to talk about the 1971 AAU Mr. America, which at the time was the biggest amateur competition in the country. And this was an historic event because Casey Viator won the competition at only 19 years old. So Casey was the youngest Mr. America winner ever. And he was really a phenomenon, a genetic freak. So we are going to talk in detail about that contest. And there was about over 30 competitors in the contest that year. And there were some real names, guys that would go on to become legends in the sport who placed in that contest or placed even down the list. So it's going to be a really interesting discussion. And then after we talk about that, we are also going to talk about some IFBB amateur shows, including the IFBB Mr. America, which was won by Ken Waller, and the IFBB Mr. USA and Mr. World, which was won by Ed Corney and Franco Colombo. So these are some contests that are usually not discussed. So some really great competitors were in both of those events as well. And then next week on part two, we're going to talk about probably the two biggest competitions in 1971, which was the NABBA Mr. Universe contest that Bill Pearl won over Reg Park and Sergio Oliva. And this was Bill Pearl's last competition at 40 years old. And then we will talk about the 1971 Mr. Olympia, where Arnold Schwarzenegger won unopposed. There was nobody else in the contest. Sergio Oliva wanted to go in the contest, but they suspended him, because the IFBB had a new rule that if you went into a competition that was not an IFBB sanctioned event, you would get suspended. So the IFBB suspended Sergio, and he was not allowed to compete against Arnold, but he did show up and he was allowed to guest pose. So that was really interesting. So we will talk about that next week. Before we get to that, I want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. They have offices all over the United States, but they can work with anybody in the continental United States just through their website. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation, plus they'll give you 20% off your first order. All right. And at the end of our interview with Jerry today, I am going to read an article which comes from the June 1972 issue of Muscle Builder magazine. It was an issue with Serge Nubre on the cover. And they talk about the highlights of the 1971 Mr. World and Mr. USA show. which was won by, as I said, Franco Colombo and Ed Corney. So I'm going to read that article when we get to the end of our interview. Of course, time is going by so fast, so I hope people get to enjoy these holidays with the special people in their lives, and I hope everybody's doing good out there. We only got one email from last week. I will read that right now. It was from Danny. He says, "Hey, John, my name is Danny Roy. I'm a 45-year-old professional musician from Calgary, Canada. I've been lifting weights naturally for 28 years, but in the past 8 months, I've gotten seriously into golden era bodybuilding workouts and its history, and I'm so hooked. What a life changer it's been. I wake up at 4 a.m. excited for my workout. The best results I've seen in years, and overall, I feel amazing. My body feels more complete, if that makes sense, like everything is working together in harmony. I feel as good or better than I did in my 20s. I stumbled onto your YouTube channel, and I just love it. I've subscribed, and I like every video I watch. I anxiously wait for the new podcast, and then I rematch it on YouTube the next week to put faces to the legends that you talk about. I've bought lots of the great books about my idols of that era that I resonate with, like all of Arnold's, Franco's, Robbie Robinson's books. I have a few Bill Pearl books on the way, and I can't wait for that Amazon truck to pull up. I bought your books, and they are fantastic. Anyhow, I just really wanted to say thank you. I know all of this takes time to do. Your channel has been so inspiring and informative. I just love it. One surprising fact is that there were some great Canadian bodybuilders back then. I had no idea. I've always been somewhat proud that the Weeders were from Montreal. Now that I'm learning a different side of them, that pride has softened quite a bit. Could you list for me the top five Canadian bodybuilders from that era that I could check out for fun, just off the top of your head? You mentioned a few of them in your killer Mr. Universe and Mr. Olympia videos. Good luck on your venture of self-employment. I will definitely request a program from you in 2022 after I gut out my basement gym for another 6 to 8 months with the program that I have. I live very cleanly. I've got my supplementation dialed in thanks to Robbie, and I have great genetics. We will have fun together when the time comes. Have a great holiday season and all the best to you and your family in 2022. Wow, great email. Thank you very much, Danny, for that email. And I love the fact that you're getting into bodybuilding more at 45 years old after 28 years. That's awesome. And it's awesome that he's really finding out about the golden era of bodybuilding. That's really, really cool. Top five Canadian bodybuilders. Let me see. Well, Roy Callender, for sure. Roy was living in Canada, even though he is originally from Barbados. From Barbados. God, let me think. I know I'm going to be forgetting people because I'm trying to think off the top of my head. But from that era, I remember Reed Schindel was really good. He was a tall bodybuilder. He placed, I think, third to Mike Mentzer and Joseph Wilkosch at the 1978 Universe that Mike won in Acapulco, Mexico. Damn, I can't think of anybody off the... Well, McAway was living in Canada for a while, but of course he's from Egypt. I'll have to get back to you on that. I'm just drawing a blank right now, but I know there's some great bodybuilders from Canada. Oh, Paul Ouellette, even though he's not from the Golden Era, he was from Canada. So Paul's got to be one of the best bodybuilders ever from Canada. Yeah, I'll get back to you on that. I can't really think of any right now. But thank you for that email. And if you guys want to email me in the future about this show or any shows that we have, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. And like Danny said, check out my YouTube channel. Oh, wow. I just got a notice that Chris Dickerson just passed away. Oh, that's terrible. Phil Williams just emailed me. Wow. That is shocking. Wow. So Chris passed away. He was in that nursing home in Florida. I just did a podcast with Phil Williams. It's called The Most Muscular Podcast, and we did it on YouTube. We just got done recording it, and now I just got the news that Chris has passed away. Wow. Rest in peace, Chris Dickerson. Boy, that's terrible news. I think Chris was about, he was in his 80s. I think he was born in 1939, so he was probably about 82 years old. And he hasn't been doing well. He's been in a nursing home. So that's terrible news. What a bummer. All right. Well, I just got this news as I'm talking to you guys. So we will get to our interview now with Jerry Branum. And this is part one of our interview about the 1971 year in review, where we talk about the Mr. America and all the amateur shows. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I have a very special guest with me today, our friend Jerry Bram, and it is the end of the year again, and we are doing our end of the year wrap-up, and because the Bodybuilding Legends podcast talks about the history of the sport, we don't talk about the year that just passed. We go back in history 50 years, 40 years, and 30 years. So welcome to the show, Jerry.
Thank you, John. Good to see you, as always.
Yeah. So this has got to be our third year now we've done this, right?
Yeah.
At least, or maybe our fourth year. I'll have to look back.
It might be the fourth, yeah.
Yeah, but it's a great idea. I came up with it a couple of years ago, and people seem to really like it. And get to cover shows that were, half a century ago.
Well, it's also good because, I mean, this is like an eyewitness. I mean, you have a lot of YouTube videos where people talk about some of these past years.
Yeah.
But they didn't actually experience it.
Yeah.
You can't really have anything better than somebody that was more or less there at the time.
Right.
The individuals involved. That's a whole different dimension. So that's what really makes it interesting, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, on today's show, I thought we could talk about the 1971 events. And there was a lot of competitions that year, a lot of very memorable historic contests that year.
Right.
And last year at this time, when we talked about the Mr. America, which if we're going back 50 years to the 1970s, for those that don't know, this is way before the MPC started, about 12 years before the MPC started. And back then, the Mr. America was the biggest amateur title in the world, and it would attract bodybuilders from all over the country. And whoever was Mr. America was considered the best amateur bodybuilder in the world.
True.
And then last year, when we talked about 1970, that was an historic event because Chris Dickerson was the first African-American to win the Mr. America. And if you go back in the history of the Mr. America, we've seen other African-American bodybuilders like Harold Poole and Sergio Oliva, and they were given the shaft many times because not only maybe because of their skin color, but also because the Mr. America didn't just reward the contest on physique. They also did an interview portion. So if the guy couldn't speak English, like Sergio was over, he came over from Cuba, so he couldn't speak English very good, or Harold Poole had the stuttering problem.
Yeah.
They would pass those guys by. They might give him the most muscular award, but then they wouldn't win the Mr. America title. They would give it to a clean cut American, usually a white guy who could speak very well and had the look. Cause I think they were kind of patterning after the Miss America contest. So they're looking for the all American male.
And they also had those odious athletic points, as they called it.
Yeah, right.
It only consisted of 5 points, John, but it could make the difference between like first place and fourth place.
Yeah.
You had the bodybuilders who really were just bodybuilders. They wanted to lift weights and get muscular and ripped and all that. But because of the AAU, Amateur Athletic Union that governed the shows, they created this thing called athletic points. We had to demonstrate some athletic skill outside of body. But now you could do Olympic weightlifting. That's what Chris Dickerson did, and Dennis Tenorino. Dennis Tenorino, I believe, got his, he won in 67. He got his athletic points from, you had to have a certain total. In those days, it was 3 Olympic lifts, the snatch, the clean and jerk, and the press. You had to get a certain total to get full 5 athletic points. So Dennis and Chris, they went to this place in New York, and they trained there with a guy named Morris Weisbrot. I can't remember the name of this. It was like a Olympic weightlifting gym. Weisbrot was closely aligned with Bob Hoffman, who was very much, he was like, he basically controlled the AAU bodybuilding back then. Mm-hmm. So Chris and Dennis, they took up Olympic weightlifting only to get the athletic points. Now, Dennis had a secondary sport he was able to get in, which was kind of interesting, fencing.
Oh, really?
He was an accomplished fencer. So a combination of, of the Olympic lifting and the fencing, it gave him the 5 athletic points. But here's the point that's interesting. Without getting those 5 points, those 5 athletic points, it was almost impossible to win the AAU Mr. America. Unless you had the full, it was so ridiculous. Like you said about the interviews. I mean, they judged bodybuilders on the way they talked, enunciate, and stuff like that.
Right.
It's like the, that's what they do with the beauty contest. You know, Miss America, remember they ask him a question and the girls say, "Will I believe in world peace?" And they say, "What's world peace?" She says, "Well, it's when Africa and all the nations get together." You know, they ridiculous. But you know, they want to see how the girls kind of represent themselves. But, you know, bodybuilding should be on purely on muscle. You know, there's different aspects to judge.
Yeah.
You don't need how a person talks or how his hairstyle is. You know, you can judge him on symmetry, proportions, you know, all these things. It's all super. It was so stupid.
It's all physique. Yeah.
It, you know, it was doomed to burn out eventually. You know, it did.
Yeah.
And the IFBB, to my knowledge, you could correct me if I'm wrong, they never judged on it. They didn't care about athletic
point. Yeah.
They didn't care about how a guy spoke.
Right.
And they don't even care whether the guy spoke English.
Yeah, I read the book. I read the book Mr. America by John Fair.
I did too. It was good.
Yeah. Yeah, and he talks in that book about how when AAU started the Mr. America, they were basing it off the Miss America beauty pageant.
That's right. Yeah.
So that's why they had the athletic points, because that was kind of like the talent portion of the contest, and then they had the personality part. Right, yeah.
I mean, when you think about it, though, it's so absurd. Does that mean that a guy who speaks very well but is not as muscular as another guy will beat the muscle guy, the muscular guy?
Well, you said that happened when Sergio lost to Jerry Daniels, right?
Yeah, that's right. Jerry Daniels had that kind of like you were describing. Jerry Daniels was a guy from the South. He had he's about 6 foot tall. He had this was 1965. He had that very kind of all-American short blonde hair, blue eyes. He had the kind of Aryan look, if you want to call it, that Bob Hoffman liked.
Right.
You know, so, you know, he wins the title over some of the most muscular guys. I mean, he beat Bob Guida, he beat Dennis, he beat Sergio Oliva.
Right.
He looked like a swimmer. He had nice arms. Don't get me wrong. He had really good arm development. He had nice bicep, but he had no cuts in his legs, no leg bicep. He had so many weak points, no back.
Yeah.
You know, and he beat these guys that were incredible. I mean, the lineup that year, if you look at the list, you'll see they had the greatest bodybuilders of the era in that show.
Yeah.
And he beat them all, this unknown guy, because of his look. And he didn't speak well.
Yeah.
That was it. That this is one of the absurd realities of bodybuilding history, you know.
Well, you just said something I didn't know. You said they could get athletic points from other sports. I thought it was all Olympic lifting.
No, any sport you had to show proficiency in it.
Okay.
You can't just participate. In other words, let's say you wanted to get your athletic points, and I don't know if they did this, but let's say you wanted to get it in ping pong, right?
Yeah.
You had to not just play ping pong, you had to win a ping pong championship.
Oh, okay.
If you were like a local ping pong champion, that would get you the 5 points.
So what about the weightlifting? Did they have to go into a weightlifting contest?
No, they had to get a certain total in the three lifts.
Okay.
Based on body weight.
Chris
Dickerson, who had really no interest in Olympic lifting, but he did it, you know, for the 70 America. He knew he needed those athletic points to win. He trained at the Morris Weisbrot, as did Dennis in 67. Dennis might have told him about it. I don't know, but he was a smaller man. His total in the three lifts, which was the press, snatch, and the clean and jerk. Later on, they eliminated the press and only became two Olympic lifts.
Right.
The snatch and the clean and jerk. He had to get a certain total based on his body weight to attain the 5 points, and he did. And
okay.
He did do it, you know, the thing is. But oddly enough, it's ironic that we're talking about this, because I don't know if you heard the news, they just eliminated Olympic weightlifting from the Olympics.
No, I didn't hear that. Wow.
Yeah. It's mind-boggling.
Are you kidding? That's crazy.
They eliminated, get this, boxing and Olympic weightlifting.
Boxing too?
Are out of the Olympic Summer Olympics. The only way I can express that is absolute disgust.
Yeah.
Because Olympic lifting is the purest show of strength. I mean, athleticism has to include power and strength.
Yeah.
And they let in something like surfing and they get rid of Olympic lifting. Again, nothing against surfing. Hey, listen, surfing takes a lot of skill. I admit it. But to me, Olympic lifting is much more of a pure sport.
Absolutely.
Than surfing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Surfing.
Yeah.
And as far as boxing, come on, you're getting, I mean, some of the greatest boxers,
Muhammad Ali,
George Foreman, they all came from the Olympics.
Sugar Ray Leonard, right?
Yeah, Sugar Ray Leonard. I mean, this is like a proving ground for future professional boxers.
Jeez, I mean, it's
almost criminal for them to do this.
I can't believe it.
I hope somehow that, I guess maybe it's out for the next Summer Olympics. What is that, 2028? I don't know when, 24, I think.
Well, I think they're going to have the Winter Olympics in February of next year, so. Okay, it'll be 2 years after that, yeah.
Right, so it'll be 24 probably.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I hope that it looks like boxing and Olympic lifting won't be in that. I'm hoping that the uproar, you know, that people, you know, already the weightlifting federations and boxing, they're complaining, you know, they're sending all kinds of complaints to the Olympic Committee.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that they reinstate those sports because otherwise.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, I'm disgusted. I won't even watch the Olympics if they'll.
Me too. That's unbelievable. Look at it.
I mean, I respect all the great athletes who compete, but you take out those were the two sports that when I watch the Olympics, those are the ones I were most interested in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
If you take them out, I have no interest in it. No.
Right, right. I agree. God, yeah. Unbelievable.
It's terrible.
Well, let's talk about 71. So you were at the 1970 Mr. America contest.
I was in Culver City Veterans Memorial Auditorium. I was there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in that contest, as you said, Chris Dickerson won. But right. Casey Viator, who was only 18 in 1970, was third place, which is right. Unbelievable. He comes back 1 year later, and he wins the Mr. America, which now he set the record, of course, winning. He was the youngest guy to ever win Mr. America at 19 right. years old.
True.
And that record still stands to this day. Well, the Mr. America is really no longer going on. But
right.
That's an unbelievable accomplishment. Here, I got the list right here. There was 33 guys in that contest.
Yeah, but wait a minute, John. I don't think anyone has ever won. Correct me if I'm wrong again, but has anyone ever won an IFBB NPC Nationals at 19? I don't think so.
Shane DeMora won the middleweights at 19.
But the overall, though.
Not the overall, though, no.
Okay, so Casey basically still holds the record.
Still holds the record, right, yeah.
Wow. It's something.
Were you there in 71?
I wasn't, but I have interesting stories about that because Ken Waller, who was a leading contender for that title, you know, he mm-hmm. I think it was held back east. I don't know. You probably have it there where it was held in 71, the venue.
Yeah, let me see. It
was back east somewhere. I don't remember where. Maybe Pennsylvania?
I think it was, yeah. Yeah, converged on York, so it must have been York, Pennsylvania.
Okay,
and it was
York,
on,
Pennsylvania, okay.
June 11th, 12th, and 13th.
Yeah. I was in college at that time. Ken Waller wanted to, you know, compete in the America, you know, go to the America back east. But the thing is, you know, the promoters in those days, they didn't pay for the bodybuilders to show up. They didn't pay their expenses, you know, their airline flight and the hotels and all that stuff because it was amateur, you know.
Yeah.
So Ken Waller approached me. I knew him from Gold's Gym. And he wanted to use my college ID card to get a cheap airline ticket. In those days, if you were a college student, you got a greatly reduced fare, like less than half or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to use my ID to fly to the, and I did. I gave him my card. He got the ticket. So he basically flew over there as Jerry Branum, you know. and I always used to think, now, what if that plane crashed? And I'm thinking, you know, my mother, what if she picked up the newspaper and sees a list of dead passengers and says my name? I mean, it was a horrible thought. It was, you know.
Did you guys look alike, Jerry?
I was about the same height as him. We were both about close to 6 foot.
Yeah.
But he was very red hair. He had very red hair.
Yeah.
A lot of freckles, very, very light skin. Although, you know, he used to put on a little makeup to give himself some color. There was no resemblance whatsoever. and the odd thing was there was a picture ID, a little photo of me on the ID card.
Yeah.
But I guess whoever he got the ticket from didn't even bother to look. He just showed him the thing. He probably held his finger over the picture.
Yeah, right.
Photo, you know, and he got his ticket, you know.
Yeah.
But the thing that really annoyed me about that was about maybe less than 6 months later, Ken got married. You know, and he invited all the guys from Gold's Gym. This is the original Gold's Gym. He invited them to his wedding, except for me, which I thought was kind of curious.
Right.
Arnold was there, Franco, everybody, Joe Gold, you name it, Zabo. Right. All the denizens of Gold's Gym, but he completely ignored me. And I never asked them about it, but I always said, wait a minute, I'm the guy who allowed him to compete in the Mr. America, and he just shuts me. It's not like I had a fight with him or did any, had any, he just, I think he just forgot, to be honest. I don't think it was a malicious thing.
Yeah.
But I would think as a gesture of gratitude, he might have at least invited me to his wedding, but he didn't. I was shocked when I saw photos. I had to see photos of him in the magazine. Oh, look at this, Arnold. There's all the guys I train with in the gym, and I'm not there.
Wow.
I know
gratitude.
If Bill Grant was in town, he would have invited Bill Grant, everybody.
Wow. Yeah.
It reminds you of that famous story I told you a while back about the first time I met Artie Zeller. Remember that thing about Muscle Beach?
Uh-huh.
I was at Muscle Beach. This goes way back. This is like 1970 or so, 16, maybe even 69. And everybody happened to be at Muscle Beach, Venice Pit. Arnold, Serge Noubre, Mike Katz, Franco, just about every great bodybuilder just happened to be there that day.
Okay.
We were all, in a kind of group talking, and I was in the group too. I was there with a guy named Pete Caputo, who was my training partner at the time.
Yeah.
And I competed, but I was strictly amateur, Most of the guys were pros. So Artie Zeller, who I never met, but I knew who he was, he has a camera on one of those, what do they call those tripods?
Yeah.
And he said, okay, guys, let's get together for a group shot. Everybody get together for a group shot. So I figured, I'm looking at all these guys, Serge Noubre, Arnold, I'm a nobody. So I voluntarily stepped out of the photo.
Okay.
So Artie's adjusting his lens, ready to, and all of a sudden, right before he takes the photo, Arnold looks and sees I'm off to the side. He says, Jerry, what are you doing? I said, well, Arnold, I shouldn't get in the photo. This is all the great body. Nobody knows who I am. I'm a nobody. He says, you were in the group. Come on, get in the photo. Come on, stand right next to me. So he brings me in the photo. So now Artie's not looking up. He's just looking at his camera, adjusting the lens. And then suddenly, I'll never forget this. He doesn't look up. Now, remember, there's a whole bunch of regular people who they're looking at all these big guys. We attracted a crowd.
Right.
There's a lot of people there, Imagine right. this. Artie does not look up. Instead, he reaches his arm out, points to me. Well, I'm in the front with Arnold, and he says, "You out of the picture." This is for known bodybuilders only. And I tell you, I was only 19 years old at the time.
Yeah.
My face, I was so embarrassed. You know what I mean? Today, I would laugh at something like that. It wouldn't bother me. But back then, I was a kid, and I didn't say anything. I started to get out of the photo, and Arnold again grabs my arm, pulls me back. I'll never forget this. Arnold looks at – now, by this time, Artie is standing up looking at Arnold, because Arnold pulls me back in the photo. And Arnold says to Artie, if Jerry's not in the photo, I'm not in the photo.
Wow.
And he took the photo.
Yeah.
For years, I've tried to find that photo to prove my story. It's wow. in the Artie Zeller collection. Arnold owns this collection now.
Okay.
He bought it after Artie died. He bought all of Artie's photos.
What year was this, Jerry?
Pardon me?
What year was this?
This was about either 69 or 70. For a long
time.
I think it might have been 69.
Wow, what a great photo.
Yeah. And there was one other photo which I did see. Artie Zeller did a little photo show a couple of years later at the Pacifica Hotel. Has a different name now in Venice. And a bunch of the guys from the gym went, and there was one of the slides showed me and Pete Caputo standing on either side of Arnold. This is taken the same day, and Arnold's doing the most muscular shot. And he used to make a face. We'd pick up one eyebrow and close the other.
Yeah, right.
That face he used to make.
Yeah.
That photo I did see. I wish I had the photos, but I never got it.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's how I met Artie Zeller.
And oh, really?
We became good friends later. I never held it against them. Laughed about it later in later years. But I got to tell you, John, I admit I was, oh, my God, I was embarrassed beyond words.
Oh, yeah, that is embarrassing.
Every eye looked at me. All these
right. people. out of the photo.
Everybody, Serge Noubre, everybody suddenly looked at me. It's like the spotlight was on me. I felt like I could have been standing there naked for all intents and
purposes. Right.
It was horrible.
Well, you mentioned Waller. Now, Waller was second to Dickerson the year before, and Casey was third. So Waller was one of the favorites, and it says, I'm reading this article right here, it says that he was disqualified from the contest in 71 because he appeared in an advertisement in a magazine. It must have been Leaders magazine.
Yeah.
I'm sure. And then they said it only has to be amateur bodybuilders. I guess they figured he got paid for the advertisement. So they had a vote, and it was 5-2 to kick him out of the show, so he wasn't able to compete.
Oh, I forgot that part, but I can tell you which ad it was. Weider did an ad where he had Waller. It was they used to do these fake. I think they still do them to this day, except now they use Photoshop. This would be way before Photoshop, way before computers. He took a photo of what's his name, Waller Ken, in the off season. You know, when he get a little smooth.
Yeah.
And, you know what Ken did is he stick his stomach out. Like he had a big pot ball, but and he put his shoulders back, so he looked like this kind of fat, out of shape guy. You never know he's a champion bodybuilder.
Yeah.
And then the after photo would show it with him in contest condition, of course, with a tremendous abs and ripped. It was to sell one of Weider's products, and it was completely fake, you know, because first of all, Ken wasn't in that bad a shape. They just did very bad lighting. He stuck his stomach out and he pulled his shoulder. He made him look as bad as possible. It was a fraudulent ad, to put it bluntly. You know, that's the ad that probably got him kicked out.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that would have been a great,
They still do those ads today. You can see them.
Before and after, for sure.
Before and after, and it's all nonsense. You know, people fall for that stuff. It's sad.
Who do you think would have won between him and Casey?
That's a good question, but I would have probably still given it to Casey.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. Because Casey improved.
Oh, okay.
70 and 71, Casey actually got a little bit more mature looking, and he was bigger.
Yeah.
He was bigger and harder in 71. It would have been close because Ken had a pretty complete body, you know?
And he was taller.
And he was taller. That's true.
Yeah.
But you see, the thing is, Casey had those incredible arms and forearms. Ken never had great arms.
Yeah, that's true.
It was
good legs, but not good arms.
His legs were terrific. Big calves, you know, small, narrow waist for a big guy, but he never had really, but you know, if they would have done the comparison shots, I think Casey would have been, it would have been close, but Casey would have edged him.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
So second place went to Pete Kromkowski, and this was, I think, Pete's first time where he took second. I think he took second like 3 years in a row. And then he finally just got fed up with the AAU and went over to the IFBB.
Yeah. Pete Kromkowski, you know, I think that's the first time I ever saw him when he competed in that show.
Okay.
And he had these, you know, Pete kind of was almost like an early version of Gary Strainham in that he had these tremendous deltoid development.
Yeah.
And he had width like you cannot believe. He was so wide.
Right.
I mean, he looked like a monster, this guy. His upper body was, and he had big legs. You know, he didn't have a aesthetic physique, but he had just a real thick, thick physique, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, that was the first time I saw him. He was just a big, talk about deltoid. This guy had gigantic deltoids.
Yeah.
You know,
and he was from Rochester, New York.
From Rochester, New York.
Where Danny Padilla was from.
Yeah, good. You knew Danny Padilla very well. I think they might have trained together a couple of times. Yeah.
And then Bill St. John was third. You remember him?
Sure do. He's still on Facebook. I see him occasionally posting. You know, he's
okay. Wow.
Yeah, he's still on Facebook. You might want to contact him.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Yeah.
He's on Facebook. He's in my friend list, so I know he's still around. So Val Vasilev, who was his good friend, 1964 Mr. America. He's still around too. He's
no kidding. Wow.
Yeah. These might be good interviews, you know.
Yeah, they would be.
I can tell you funny stories about Val Vasilev too. But the thing is that Bill St. John had a nice physique. We had really great abs, very classic abdominal development. And the thing about St. John is that he had one of those physiques where nothing other than his abs stood out, but he had great symmetry and proportion. He had all the body parts.
Yeah.
And that's probably why he placed high. In other words, he didn't have great abs, arms. He didn't have massive legs or giant calves, but he had nice overall. He was in shape and he had great symmetry and proportion. That accounts for his high placing.
They said that him and Kromkowski actually tied. I don't know how they did the scoring back then, but they both got 350 points. Casey got 377 points, so sounds like he was a pretty easy winner. But Pete and Bill tied, and then Pete won the tiebreaker, and he got second place.
Yeah, well, Pete was a lot bigger than Bill St. John.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably edged him out on the size. But, you know, as far as proportions and symmetry, you know, if you went by that, you'd have to give it to Bill St. John over Pete Kupkowski.
Because, you know, it's funny, I'm reading this article here, and it said that, you know, think you don't think about this, but they didn't have air conditioning back then.
Yeah, so
when they held it in the auditorium and it was in the summertime, they said it was usually like in the 90 degrees. So can you imagine watching this contest and there's no air conditioning?
These guys were probably sweating like crazy, man.
I know.
You know, I'm sure it was. You know.
Ed Corney was fourth.
Ed Corney, yeah. There's a guy who, that was obviously before he went to the IFBB.
Yeah, yeah.
I met Ed Corney in 1970.
A year before this.
And I forget whether he won the California either 70 or 71. I can't remember. The thing I remember about Ed Corney when I met him, I think he was living in Fresno, California when I met him.
Okay.
I met him at the original Gold's Gym, and I'd seen him in the magazines. And I thought he had a really fantastic physique. What did I ask him? I can't remember. I asked him something. I asked him this question about nutrition, and he gave me this funny answer. I asked him something about how he got so hard looking for contests, and he gave me this answer that was just absurd, you know, something about drinking orange juice or something like that. And back then, I knew that it was crazy, and he wasn't being sarcastic, you know, and I just looked at him and I said, well, you know, I didn't say anything. I said, well, thanks, Ed. I appreciate it. Good luck in the contest. That's what I met Ed Corney. I mean, he had a great physique. You know,
he did. He really did have a great physique. Yeah.
And posing, forget it. I mean, he was probably one of the first classic bodybuilding posers. I mean, he just took it seriously. He flowed. I mean, he made it look like a dance. The only guy comparable to him in modern times, I'd say, would be Lee Labrada, who kind of did a similar type of posing routine.
Well, he was good back then too, Ed Corney, when you first met him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he was great. He won that. In fact, I'm not sure of the year, but either might have been 71. He had just won the California, and I saw him win the California.
Okay.
That's why I went up to him at Gold's Gym to congratulate him and ask him how he got in such great shape. He had great abs, you know.
Yeah.
He was a very nice guy, quiet guy. You know, wasn't a loud mouth or anything like
right.
that.
Right, right, yeah.
Nice guy, though. Very, you know, you might have saw the photos. He trained with Arnold Little at Gold.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Very much into the training, very serious.
They said he lived in Fremont, California.
Oh, Fremont. Okay, I thought it was Fremont. I knew it started with an F. Yeah, I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
I also remember vaguely that he had quite a few children, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he was married a few times, too.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly how many, but I remember that he had quite a few children.
When I did the interview with Danny Padilla, I know he was good friends with him when Danny came out to California.
Yeah.
And he said, Ed was a badass. He said he was a bouncer in a bar. And he goes, you don't want to get him mad. He said, he'll rip your ears off.
That's true. He was. Yeah. He was a bouncer. He was a tough guy.
Yeah.
He was one of the, you know, in my life, you know, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, where they had a lot of these tough guy types. I always found a strange irony in the fact that some of the loudest braggadocio guys, oh, I'll beat your head in, blah, 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 you know. When it came down to actual fighting, they were not either not great fighters or would run the other way. The real dangerous guys were the quiet guys that you wouldn't expect to be tough. They would come up and knock you out with one punch.
Right.
So I saw that over and over again. And Ed Corney was one of those guys.
Yeah.
He was a nice, friendly guy, but I mean, you know, He could knock you right down. I mean, I don't know why anyone would want to start up with Ed, though, because he was such a nice guy. He was a very likable guy.
Right. There
was no reason to start up with him.
Right. And then I'll just go down the list because there were so many great bodybuilders here that were on the C.F. Smith, who was Carl Smith. He was in fifth place.
C.F. Smith was a physician. He was a physician who unfortunately liked to dabble in drugs, and I don't mean drugs to cure illnesses. I'm talking about mind drugs. He was
all the time. Yeah.
And I remember Bill Reynolds did an article on him, which I thought was hilarious. It was called the non-routine routine, and the gist of the article was that C.F. Smith said he had never had any idea what muscles he was going to train when he went to the gym. Just went completely by instinct.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, well, what if he felt like training arms every day? Would he do that? Train arms like 6 days a week or chest?
Right. Right.
I never got the answer. I don't know. But I met him a couple of times. He wasn't a bad guy. He was in a, you know, I admired him because at the time when I met him, I wanted to be a doctor myself. And the fact that he was a champion bodybuilder, I think he placed pretty well in a USA show, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, yeah.
The fact that he was a champion bodybuilder and a physician impressed me. And I was also impressed by a guy named John Gorgut and Craig Whitehead were also bodybuilder physicians.
Yeah.
I liked the fact that they were physicians because back then, John, I don't know if you're old enough to remember this, most bodybuilders, maybe it's still true today, I don't know. Most bodybuilders were thought to be muscleheads, really dumb guys.
Sure.
All they could do is lift weights and do nothing else. And, you know, to have guys, even back then, medical school, you had to be pretty smart to get through medical school back then and today. And the fact that these guys got through medical school, to me, was a good reflection on bodybuilding, that the fact that they were champion bodybuilders and medical doctors showed that you could have the old days, a sound mind and a sound body. That's what impressed me about these guys.
It's funny you mentioned that about the mind-altering drugs, because I got into bodybuilding in 77, and I remember C.F. Smith was in one of the – I think he was in the AAU Mr. USA or something like that.
Yeah.
And I remember the report, reading it in the magazine, they said he was in really good shape and he could have won the contest, but he was acting really weird on stage. Like, I don't know if he wasn't posing right or he was talking on stage, but they ended up kicking him out of the contest.
No, he was loaded. I remember that. He was stoned out of his mind at that show.
Wow. Yeah.
Why he took the drugs like that, I don't know, but he was stoned about 50% of the time, which is kind of scary if you think about that. How would you like to be a patient of this guy?
Yeah, really.
It reminds me of the time I went into a hospital and I saw this guy who was going to do surgery and he was wearing a clown hat. And I remember commenting to a nurse, I said, whatever happens, don't let that guy operate on you. She said, oh, he's a top physician. I said, I don't want any guy who wears a clown hat operating on me. No way. Uh-uh. Wheel me out of here. He was a smart guy. He was just nuts. He was very eccentric. CFP.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
So we got some other names on this list. Annabelle Lopez was sixth. Charles Amato was seventh.
Charles Amato, he was known for his abs. He went best in the 70 America. You might remember Casey won almost all the body part awards: best back, best arms, best legs. I don't know if he won most muscular. I don't remember. Maybe Amato won. I don't know. But Amato won one of the few body parts that Casey didn't win, which was best abdominal. He was from Oregon.
Yeah.
Chuck Amato. Yeah. Nice physique, lean, very lean cut, great abs.
I remember him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bob Gallucci was ninth. Remember him? He was the national.
Bob Gallucci was a teenage Mr. America from Connecticut.
Yeah,
went on to become a teacher. He actually became a principal. I don't know what level it was, high school or what. He was an avowed natural bodybuilder, one of the first.
One of the first,
very strong about natural bodybuilding. I mean, very, you know, a total advocate. He would make statements. He would, if he had to take any drug to compete, he would not compete at all. He was very staunch anti-drug.
That was probably before people were even saying they were natural, right?
That's right. Way before.
Yeah.
And, you know, and of course, because he had a great physique, he had good arms, he had a good overall physique.
Big structure, big guy.
Big guy, yeah. But, you know, people accused him. They didn't believe him. Just like today. I mean, any guy who is in great shape and muscular, whether he's big or not, if he says he's clean and natural, I mean, I know you've gotten this yourself because I've seen it online where people have accused you, naturalist universe, of being on drugs.
They
refuse to accept the fact that some people can actually get in that kind of condition without drugs.
Yeah.
I mean, and I've always got annoyed about that because rather than give a guy like you credit for hard training and everything you've done to attain that physique, they got to put you down. John Hansen, without drugs, he'd have no physique. You know, the fact is that they couldn't be successful.
Right.
They couldn't get a physique. So, and, you know, they were so annoyed they kind of like pass it on to you. And that's what I believe. No, seriously, I think that's the mindset.
Yeah.
All these guys that go after the natural body build because they cannot believe that these guys got a physique and they couldn't without drugs, you know, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah. And they don't understand that the years and years of workouts, you know, all the hard workouts, all the eating, they don't understand that.
You know, I mean, I've gotten big fights online about, because I defended the bodybuilders of yesteryear, like Reg Park and Steve Reeves.
Yeah.
I knew Reg Park very well.
Yeah.
And, you know, these guys did not take steroids. I know this for a fact.
Right.
And yet people say, oh, you, Reg Park, you did a 500-pound belt. Come on. You see him in Hercules. Get out of here. Don't, you're out of your mind. And Steve Reeves took a bunch of this stuff. No, they did not. These guys were you want to call them genetically gifted.
Yeah.
Reg Park was a fanatic when he was a young man. He trained that 5x5 system.
Yeah.
Steve Reeves is very, very dedicated and stuff like that. I mean, Steve Reeves would not do any exercise if he thought it would make his waist wider. He would avoid it.
Yeah.
Any exercise that even had an inkling of making, because he loved having that narrow weight. These guys were very dedicated and they just had good genetics. That's all. I watched a video the other day of a guy who calls himself a scientist. I guess he has a PhD. He was talking about elite bodybuilders. And he said, without having the proper genetics, he made a flat statement. It's impossible to be Mr. Olympia. And I took exception to that because I could think of at least one guy or more than one guy who won the Mr. Olympia that didn't have the greatest genetics.
Right.
I'll name him, Larry Scott.
Yeah.
Sure. Larry Scott had fantastic arms and delts. Yeah, and he had a nice looking guy, but he had no back, no width. I mean, his legs were extremely mediocre, good calves, but mediocre thighs, not much leg biceps. He was missing a lot of body parts, yet he won the Mr. Olympia twice. John, this is an example of a guy, and I'm not trying to put this guy down. He doesn't obviously know the history of bodybuilding.
Right.
Because if he had, he wouldn't have made that statement.
Yeah.
Of course, the better your genetics, the greater the chance of winning the Olympia. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, you could, and I've said this many times, you could take all the steroids and drugs in the world. If you don't have the genetics to go with it,
right.
You're not going to win the Olympia. You still have to have certain genetics.
Right.
But
in
other words, Scott's genetics were in his arms and shoulders. But if you talk about overall genetics, he wasn't that genetically gifted. That's
what I mean. Or look at Franco and Frank Zane.
There you go. Look at Frank Zane. Never got big.
Yeah.
Fantastic physique. I mean, just so classic.
Yeah.
I mean, ripped. I mean, tiny waist, everything. But, I mean, if Frank Zane had 19-inch arms, I'd be surprised. I don't even think he had 19-inch
arms. No, I don't either. Yeah.
To me, his arms look like maybe 18 at the most.
At the most, yeah.
But, I mean, would anyone say that he didn't deserve to win the Olympia three times? I don't think so.
I wouldn't.
I think he deserved it.
Yeah. You know? Well, it's funny you mentioned Reg Park because I remember I read Bob Gallucci's book, which was really good. It was really interesting. And he went into a lot about his training and stuff. And
and
I totally believe he was natural because, you know, just from reading the book. But he said his idol was Reg Park. And he looked very much like Reg Park. He had the same kind of big structure, you know.
Yeah, very thick with a big rib cage like Reg Park. You know?
Yeah.
And, of course, we know that Reg Park was Arnold's idol and mentor.
Yeah.
That's the guy who got Arnold into bodybuilding. Reg Reg Park. You know, and I was very lucky to get to know Reg Park in his last couple of years. You know, I learned a lot of stuff. We did seminars together. He was a terrific guy. Great. And very, very classy guy.
Yeah.
You know, if you said, gentlemen. If you said to me, use one word to describe Reg Park, class.
Yeah.
Real class. This guy, he dressed well.
Right.
Like an English gentleman, even though he lived in South. Well, he was born in England, Leeds, England. But just a terrific but he was a no BS guy. That's what I loved about Reg. He would tell you. I mean, he would never lie to you. You know, if you said, Reg, give me an opinion of my physique. He would tell you exactly what he thought, pulling no punch. He wouldn't try and hurt your feelings.
Yeah.
He'd be honest with you, and I appreciated that about him.
Yeah.
Very honest, forthright guy.
Yeah.
That's why when he said he didn't take steroids, I was adamant against steroids.
Right.
In fact, I remember one of the last years he said he didn't want to go to the Arnold show, even though he loved Arnold, because he couldn't stand the way the physiques look with the, you know, in those days, this is, you know, a couple of years, they had, still had the bloated belly. He hated the look of the pro bodybuilders.
Yeah.
He thought it was destroying bodybuilding. This is what Reg said.
Well, I always believed him because you could see as he got older, like when he went into the Mr. Universe against Arnold in 1970, where I think he was already in his 40s, I think.
Right.
You could see his physique had declined. You know, right, exactly. It wasn't the same physique he had when he was winning Mr. Universe, which is what happens when you're natural and you get in your 40s and 50s. Your physique goes down. Yeah,
that's right. That's very true. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And then 10th place was very notable because that was Mike Mentzer, who was also 19 years old. He was the same age as Casey.
Right.
And as we mentioned before, or you were going to mention the story, Mike met Casey at that contest.
Right.
And who did I talk to? I think it was Dave Mastorakis. And Dave was good friends with Mike. And Dave told me that after the contest, Dave was not in that contest, but Mike called him up. And he goes, Dave, he goes, I was in the Mr. America. And he goes, I got something really exciting to tell you. And he goes, whoa, you were in the Mr. America. What'd you do? And he goes, I got 10th. He goes, you got 10th in Mr. America? He goes, yeah, but that's not important. He goes, I met this guy named Arthur Jones. And Casey Viator won the contest, and they were telling me about this Nautilus way of training, you know, with Nautilus equipment. It's high-intensity training. He was more excited about that than placing 10th in the contest.
Right. Yeah, he really believed it. I mean, he corresponded with Casey after that guy. They became good friends. And of course, Arthur Jones was his kind of mentor.
Yeah.
And that's how the whole thing started from
that. That's how the whole thing started, yeah.
Yeah, before that, he was training 6 days. So he was doing the standard training of those days, six days a week.
Right.
You know, about 15 to 20 sets of body part, you know, he trained like everybody else.
Yeah.
And it was good enough to win the, well, hold on, let me think. No, I was going to say when he won the IAP America, he was already on high intensity. No, he up until the 71 show, he trained in conventional manner. After 71.
He started training high intensity. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And talk about great genetics. If you ever seen pictures of Mike at 19 years old, oh my God, what a great, huge arms and legs at 19. It was amazing.
Yeah, he just kind of looked like a smaller version of how he looked later on.
Yeah.
He had the small looking waist, the big calves and, you know, good arm. You know, I mean, he just got bigger.
I'm surprised he didn't place higher, actually.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess maybe because he wasn't known.
Yeah.
You know, completely unknown back then. Nobody knew who he was.
And then it says William Grant from Orange, New Jersey got 12th. That's got to be Bill Grant, right?
That's Bill Grant. Yeah. Bill Grant. Yeah. Bill, he competed in the 70 America too. In fact, that's where I met Bill Grant.
Right. You saw him in the gym.
Yeah. You know, the story, I met him, about 2 days after the 70 America. I'd seen him and I'd been at the show, as I said, and he was in the gym training with a friend of his. I remember it was at the Chinning Bar. You know, in Gold's gym. And I said to him, hey, Bill, I said, you know, I went up to him and I said, I think you got robbed. And Zabo, you know, Zabo Kazuski, you know, Mr. Abs.
Yeah.
He was particularly impressed with Bill Grant because Bill Grant had great abs.
Okay.
And Zabo had said to me, you know, that guy Grant should have placed much higher.
Yeah.
He got ripped off or he should have been in the top five.
Yeah.
So, you know, I went up to Bill Grant. I said, Bill, I said, Zabo and I both agree. You should have placed a lot higher, you know. And I remember he was still annoyed. He looked at me and he just said, "Yeah, thanks a lot, man." And he walked away. That was how he laughed when we talk about the story today. I mean,
right?
Like, and because we became close friends over the years,
yeah, you know, right.
It kind of gave me the brush off when
50 years later you're still close friends.
Yeah. 51 years later, and then that first one wasn't very auspicious, you know. He was still annoyed about the guy. He didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
He was pissed off.
And then it says Kent Keen from Orlando, Florida was in 15th.
Yep. Kent and Bill Grant were good friends. They competed in a lot of contests. Kent died about a couple of years ago.
You know?
Kent went on to win the, what was it called? The Masters Mr. North America was, I think, his biggest title.
Yeah. But he was a training partner of Arnold and
that's right.
Of Gold's Gym. Yeah.
Very enthusiastic guy. Very well liked. He was actually way back in he was even in the 67 America that Tenorino competed.
Wow.
He was in that show. But, Kent was a good guy. I mean, competed in a lot of shows, and he worked at Gold's Gym for a number of years. Very well liked.
Yeah.
Kent had this great thing where he remembered everybody's name.
Oh, yeah.
Once you joined the gym, he knew your name. Amazing how he did that.
Yeah.
The only other guy I've seen able to do that, I think I mentioned this before, was Arnold.
Oh, yeah?
once Arnold meets you, he remembers your name.
Hmm.
It's not just, all right, I saw him a lot in the old days, so it's natural he'd remember, but I've seen him do it with other people.
Wow.
I'll meet them one time, and a year later, they go up to him. Like, let's say the guy's name's Paul. You know, he'll go up and say, hey, Arnold, and Arnold will say, how you doing, Paul? And I'm thinking, whoa, one time? I would never remember a guy's name a year later that I met one time for 5 minutes. Right. Never. I forget people's names 2 minutes after
me
I meet
too.
Them. Come on, you know?
I thought you were going to say Bill Pearl, because Bill Pearl
was there
too.
No, but it was I was telling a guy in the gym the other day, you know, this kid at working the desk, you know, I said, you know, the best way to remember somebody's name, this is an old psychology trick. I said, in the course of the first conversation, without seeming unnatural, try and mention his name several times in the conversation. You know, like I'm talking to John this, John that, John, do you remember that? If you mention the name about 5 times, the odds of remembering it are about 90% greater than if you don't.
Wow. Yeah, that makes sense.
Go psychology, try it next time. You'll see.
Okay.
Don't make it look unnatural, because then you look like you're nuts, you know? Hey, John. Hey, John.
Yeah.
Crazy. You got to kind of slip it in there, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then let's see, who else? Oh, we got Bob Birdsong from Louisville, Kentucky, was 21st.
That's right. Bob Birdsong was, people forget, he was from Kentucky. Yeah.
And he would actually go on to win the IFBB America in 74.
Yep. And he's still around and he's still working out, you know.
Yeah.
He's gotten a lot smaller, but he looks pretty good, Bob.
And healthy, yeah.
Yeah, he looks good. You know, you saw him at the beach show, remember?
Yeah.
I mean, he looks pretty good, you know.
Very lean, inducted. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was inducted in that Hall of Fame in the
muscle. Right.
Yeah.
And Don Ross was 22nd.
Don Ross, yeah, my old friend who died in 1995. Yeah, he was a.
Oh, he's been dead that long, huh?
Yeah, very eccentric character, but a great guy, nice guy. I actually said Don Ross wrote a series of little booklets that were published by Perry Rader at Iron Man Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
I actually sent for one of his booklets when I was a kid. You know, I was, how old was I? I had to be like 15. I sent for one. I told him that later on when we became friends, you know. He was an intelligent, he's very eccentric, but very intelligent. Just a fun guy to be around. I mean, he always was very lively. You know, I was very sad when he died. Very sad.
Yeah, he was very passionate about bodybuilding. He loved bodybuilding.
Yeah. Very passionate. Loved it.
I was going to tell you, I was going to mention the story. When I was in the Natural Mr. Universe contest, it was in Venice Beach High School, right on the beach.
Yeah.
And I went out from Chicago by myself. I didn't know anybody there. And it was a new organization, so I didn't know anybody. And Kent Keen was one of the backstage expediters.
That's right.
And when I got done with my posing routine at night, I was walking off and he stopped me and he goes, man, you look really good. He goes, you remind me of Mike Mentzer, which I didn't have the legs of Mike Mentzer. I don't know why he said that, but it made me, I was like, man, this guy was the training partner of Arnold. I knew who he was.
Yeah.
You know, he probably didn't know that I knew who he was, but that was a great compliment.
It was, but Kent was, he did that a lot in his later years. Until he became too sick, he expedited backstage. He was like a backstage expediter.
Yeah,
and he just loved being around bodybuilding. This guy just loved it. I mean, he loved it all the way to the end. He loved it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let me mention a couple more. Doug Beaver, remember Doug Beaver?
I trained with Doug Beaver a couple of times at Gold's Gym in the early set, right around that time. As a matter of fact, it might have been while he was training for that show.
Wow.
Doug Beaver was known for his triceps.
Yeah, huge triceps, I remember. Yeah, yeah.
Like almost like a Bill Pearl tricep, stuck out like a...
Yeah.
And he was a really nice guy. I still can remember doing line tricep extensions with Doug Beaver.
Yeah.
his triceps, I mean, he had such a very, very nice guy. I think he's from the Midwest somewhere, if I remember correctly.
Fremont, Ohio, yeah.
Yeah.
And, Fremont, Ohio, yeah.
Yeah, and I was shocked years later. I just happened to notice something on Facebook about, you know, the late Doug Beaver, and I was like stunned. I hadn't even known he passed away. I felt bad.
Yeah,
he was just a nice guy, really great guy. We did quite a few arm workouts together.
And then here's one that's really interesting, Jerry. Ronald Thompson from Flint, Michigan, 30th place.
30th place. So went on to win, what was it, 74?
Let me see.
Mr. America?
Because, yeah, he did win Mr. America. It was only a couple years later.
Yeah, I think it was 74.
74, you're right.
Yeah, because 73 was Jim Morrison, 75.
Three years later, he wins.
Yeah, 3 years later. He went from dead last to winning the Mr. America. Now, my question is, I don't even remember him being in that contest in 71. So my question is, what did he look like that was so bad in 71 that he would place? Because if you remember how he looked when he won, he had a nice physique. He had big calves, nice sweep on his thigh, nice arm shape, good abs. He had a great overall symmetry look, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, how could he have looked so bad?
I know.
Was the competition that great in 71 that a guy like him would place dead last? Or did he just come in out of shape? Or maybe he was just starting out.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
There was never any photos of him shown from that show.
No.
So I don't know what the guy looked like.
Let me see if they got the body part awards here. Yeah, they do. Most muscular went to Casey. He beat out Mike Dayton. Remember Mike Dayton?
I knew Mike Dayton well, too. Mike Dayton was a strange guy. He was into strongman feats.
He
used to hang himself, right? And he would, like, rip telephone books, all this.
Break handcuffs.
He'd bend horseshoes. He'd do all this stuff.
Yeah.
But Mike Dayton was a very quiet, nice guy from Central California somewhere. I can't remember where. In fact, I competed against him. He beat me in about two shows. I mean, he had big, really big calves, I remember. Nice physique, you know. And I remember, the thing I remember about him, he showed up at the original Gold's Gym, and it was about 105 degrees in the summer. And he would wear this winter overcoat in the gym and out into the street. I remember walking down the street with him. He had this big, heavy winter jacket on. And it was 100. I was dying. I was wearing a tank top, and I was sweating like I was in the shower. And this guy's wearing this big, heavy overcoat. And I said, Mike, aren't you like hot? I mean, he says, no, I'm okay.
Yeah. When I saw the World's Strongest Man contest in 1977 that Lou Ferrigno and Franco were in, it was in Universal Studios in Southern California. Right. He was in it also.
Yeah. He did actually pretty good. He won quite a few shows in California.
Yeah.
Like I said, he beat me in two shows in California. I mean, he placed pretty well in some national shows too.
Yeah. I think he was 11th here, right behind Mike Mentzer.
Yeah. But you know what's interesting about Mike Dayton? When I knew Mike Dayton, he was like, he was a young guy, you know. A little older than me, I believe. He had like curly, kind of light-colored curly hair, right? So only about maybe 6 months ago, I was, you know, kind of fooling around online, and I came across a video that said something about Mike Dayton, former bodybuilding champion, being interviewed. So I said, wow, I'm gonna watch this because I haven't seen Mike in years. You know, let's see if he stayed in shape, right?
Yeah.
Okay, it was like a talk show format, and there's Mike Dayton, and he became like a heavy set guy. He was a very lean guy when
always lean, yeah.
All waist were good. He became like a heavy kind of barrel chested big guy, but he was bald.
Hmm.
And you know, I'm watching the show, and for the first 10 minutes, I said, "When are they going to bring Mike Dayton on?" His face didn't even look the same.
Wow.
I didn't recognize him. It took me 10 minutes. Only when I started listening carefully, because I remembered his voice, I said, son of a bitch, that is Mike Dayton. I didn't even he was completely unrecognizable from the Mike Dayton I know.
Wow.
He seemed to have – Mike Dayton, when I knew him, was a kind of a shy, kind of introverted guy. He was now a little bit more talkative. You know, just like Frank Zane changed over the years.
Yeah.
Frank Zane became more, you know, a little bit more talkative over the years. When I knew him, he was a super introvert. Also didn't like to talk much. Same thing happened with Mike Dayton. But Mike Dayton was a nice guy also. Very nice guy. And his sister, Laura, was actually a bodybuilding writer who I also
knew. Yeah. I remember her name, Laura Dayton.
Laura Dayton wrote for some magazines, and I knew her pretty well. Very nice person also. She's still around.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. In the body part awards, Casey won most muscular. He beat out, we've said, Mike Dayton. He beat Bill St. John was third. Anthony Pace. So I don't know who that is. He was fourth.
He was a black guy, if I remember correctly. Wasn't a black guy. Yeah. Okay. I don't remember much about him though.
And Pete Kromkowski was fifth in most muscular. So they must've been going more for definition than size.
Yeah. Yeah. In those days, that particular most muscular aspect of that show, where they went by basic muscle definition.
Okay.
In other words, it would be like a consolation prize to the guy who
might have
been the most cut guy, but not the biggest guy. Whereas the biggest guy and the most cut guy would win the overall. The guy who was like in really good shape and cut, they give like a consolation prize, the most muscular. And that's the way it was awarded. So if you, they usually went to the most, the guy with the most muscle definition. That's true.
Yeah, I remember in 76 when Cal Stalak won, Joe Means won most muscular. He was shredded that year. He was totally shredded.
There's a good example. I mean, Cal Skellick, as you know, I mean, they were comparing him to Arnold. He had this really thick upper body, huge arms.
Yeah.
And Joe Means, again, very lean, but shredded abs.
Yeah.
I mean, he had this, this guy looked like he had 5% body fat.
Right.
He was shredded.
Especially for that time.
Did you interview Joe Means?
No. Yes, I did. I'm sorry, I did. Yeah.
If I remember correctly, you might remember this. I think you asked him about his diet, how he got to be that cut. And I remember him saying something about he basically followed, he eliminated carbohydrates.
Yeah. Yeah.
From his diet. And he was probably one of the first guys to do that. And it just goes to show you how well it worked in some guys. I mean, this guy had no fat at all.
None. He was shredded. None. Yeah.
And later on, he became a policeman.
He was a police officer, He had a long career.
You know, he gained weight over the years, and he became a much bigger guy. I mean, I'm not saying he was fat or anything.
Right.
I mean, he's still alive, thank God. I mean, like me, he loves dogs, which I give him credit for. We're friends on Facebook, too. But I mean, you know, the guy, basically, what I'm trying to say is he transformed his physique by diet into this extremely lean, shredded. You could not get more. Remember, he had veins, too.
Yeah.
It wasn't just muscle definition. He was also highly vascular.
Yeah.
In fact, I never asked Vince Guaranda about him, but I'm sure that if I would have shown a picture of Joe Means at his best shape to Vince, Vince would have said, now that's the physique.
Yeah.
That's the kind of physique Vince liked.
Yeah.
Very vascular, lean, with great abs, no body fat.
Right.
And small hips and small butt. That's what Vince admired. That's the kind of physique he admired. Yeah.
So best arms, Casey won best arms, of course, but Mike Mentzer, who was only in 10th place, was second in best arms.
Well, Mike always had the arms.
Yeah. Interesting, though, that he was all the way in 10th, and they still recognized his arms enough to put him in second place.
Yeah. That's how good they were. I mean, he had just tremendous arms the whole time, you know.
And Bill Grant was in third.
Yeah. Well, Bill, you know, he had those Bill Grant biceps.
Yeah.
Which at 75 years of age.
Still there.
Still has him. Seriously. Bill sometimes puts videos of him. I just saw one recently. He's like 75 and he goes like this. He says, I still have the guns. And he went like this. And sure enough, he had a great, great bicep a bicep that would be great for any age, much less a guy 75. You know,
Bill's still putting posing pictures up with his shirt off at 75 years old.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, something I wouldn't dare to do.
No. Casey also won best back.
Yeah. Casey had a great
Pete Kromkowski was second to him there.
Yeah.
He won best chest and Kromkowski was second to him there. Charles Amato won best abs, as we mentioned.
Yeah.
Anthony Pace was second, and Bill St. John was third.
Right. Who was second in abs?
Anthony Pace.
Okay. I don't remember that whether he was a black guy or a white guy. I just vaguely remember that guy, Anthony Pace.
Yeah, he must have placed low in the show. He was 20th.
Okay.
And then best legs, Casey won best legs. Mike Mentzer got second in best legs also, and Bob Bellucci got third. So that's interesting.
Yep. Yeah.
So it just goes to show you how phenomenal Casey was. He won almost every body part award at 19 years old, and he was probably the biggest, most muscular guy in the whole show at 19. That's just
incredible. Oh, yeah, he was considered the word back then, he was like a freak of nature.
Yeah, yeah.
People just couldn't believe it. I mean, how old was I? Well, I was already past teenage. I was 21 when he won that show, but I remember looking at him, and thinking, my God, imagine if I had to compete in this. When I competed in teenage shows in the 60s, if a guy like him showed up, I would have left. Right. I wouldn't even stand on stage with a guy like Gacy.
Right.
He'd make everybody look terrible. Seriously.
Right.
Freak of nature. And you know his diet. Well, I mean, this guy, what he ate, did you ever hear what he ate?
No.
He'd make this concoction where he'd use up like a pound of peanut butter and jelly and all this stuff. I mean, he ate like kind of an Elvis Presley diet where
he'd kind of weird.
I mean, it shows you his metabolism must have been tremendous, because I remember reading his diet, and I'm not sure. I can't believe he'd do that before show, but even in the off season, you would get like 400 pounds eating that kind of diet. I mean, yet he still was muscular. I mean, it was just a phenomenon, Casey.
Yeah.
You know, my favorite story about Casey was when he tried to make a comeback at the Masters Olympia. I don't know if I remember that year, a couple of years ago back, you know, much older. This is many years later. Tried to make a comeback at the Masters Mr. Olympia. Didn't place and didn't look anything like Casey. He was completely out of shape. You know, he was an old friend of mine. So I went backstage and I said, Casey, I said, I'm sorry that you didn't place, you know, and I thought he was like going to be all, you know, sad. And, you know, he was laughing and happy. and he says, well, the truth is, he says, I hate to admit this, but I only trained 3 weeks.
Oh my God.
He says, I just got through my seventh divorce or something.
Oh, jeez.
Like, and he wasn't at all dejected. He was happy.
Yeah.
It didn't bother him a bit that he didn't place, you know. I mean, because I guess in his mind, I'm just assuming, he probably figured, hey, I already proved my worth, you know.
Yeah.
Didn't he get third in the Olympia 1 year? I remember he got third.
Yeah, Chris Dickerson won, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he was a proven commodity, youngest Mr. America. I mean, you know, no matter what he looked like, it's like when Sergio made that comeback in the Olympia, was it 84?
84, yeah.
And when he got eighth place, was it, if I remember correctly?
Mm-hmm.
And remember he said at the – which I think you play.
I play at the beginning, yeah. I'll forever be in the middle.
There will always be one myth.
Yeah.
And he's right. In other words, no matter what he placed in that show, people won't remember him for his eighth place.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't even matter.
Yeah, it makes no difference at all. They're going to remember this magnificent freak body. And I mean that in the kindest way.
Yeah.
That even to this day, I don't think anybody has really equaled the genetics of Sergio Oliva.
No.
Not even his own son.
No. I mean, no.
This guy was just an absolute freak.
I know.
And you know, so who cares that he got eighth? He's already, and that's the way Casey was. He said, I look like crap, but who cares?
Right. So, I look at pictures of Sergio today, and I'm still in awe.
Me too.
I
come across show, you know, like some of those side points where he's going like that with the arm. And I'm thinking, holy Toledo.
His arms are bigger than his head. His waist is so small. It's just like,
and he had those gigantic forearms and hands.
Yeah. And he had legs.
Yeah, and I remember the first time I saw him in person, I had to rub my eyes in disbelief. I couldn't believe how small his waist was.
I know.
And his shoulders were like this.
Yeah, yeah.
The only guy I've ever seen in all the years I've been in bodybuilding who had a smaller waist than Sergio was Brian Buchanan. The only guy.
Yeah.
The only guy I've ever seen.
Well, another show I want to talk about was, let's go to the IFBB. We'll continue with the amateur shows. Now, when we talked about these shows in the 1960s, remember when they had Mr. Olympia when Larry Scott won it?
Yes.
You would always have the Mr. America, the Mr. Universe, and sometimes even the Mr. World. They would have them all in one night.
That's true. That's all held at the Brooklyn Academy of Music.
All at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, yeah. So now in the 1970s, it kind of changed because that year they had the Mr. Olympia over in Europe for the first time. So that was the first time they moved it from New York.
Right.
And they brought it over to Paris, which we'll talk about in a minute. But so they didn't have the Mr. But they did have the Mr. Universe with the Mr. Olympia that year. But the other shows, the Mr. World and the Mr. America, they were held in different places. So the Mr. America, the IFBB Mr. America, was won by Ken Waller.
Wow.
So Ken must have went into this show after he lost or he couldn't compete in the AAU Mr. America, which he was probably favored to win because he got second the year before.
Yeah. He might have won. He might have beat Casey in the AAU. It's possible.
Yeah.
You know, 'cause like you say, he was taller.
Yeah.
But Casey was so extraordinary. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, in all deference to Ken, I don't think Ken had a better physique than Casey that year.
Yeah.
I just don't think so. Casey was more complete and just so freaking thick.
Yeah.
Hard to beat, you know? I mean, who else was in that America? Who did Ken beat in 71, the IFBB?
It's interesting because Ed Corney went over to it, and he won the short class. He beat out Chuck Colras and Ed Giuliani, of course.
Okay. Yeah.
And then, now this is interesting too, Boyer Coe went over to the IFBB, which you and I were just saying, we were surprised that Boyer went over to the competed in the AAU, in the IFBB, right. Him being an AAU guy.
Yeah, that is surprising. Because if I remember correctly, Boyer Coe won it in 1969, the AAU American.
The year before Dickerson did, yeah.
Which makes me wonder why he would want to compete in the IFBB America when he already had an America title. I don't understand the thinking behind that.
Yeah, and then he already won the universe too, because he won the NABBA universe. He went over to London and won the NABBA universe.
I guess you'd have to ask Boyer. I don't know what his reasoning was for that. Personally, yeah. I wouldn't have done it. I mean, he already has an America under his belt. He has a universe title. Why risk going in the American, losing like he did to Ken Waller?
Yeah. Well, knowing Boyer, I think he just liked to compete. I think he, his number of the year before too, he did the AAU Mr. World.
Yeah.
With Sergio and Arnold. Yeah.
Maybe he figured that it would just be an easy win for him.
Yeah. You know,
because he did have a great physique. Maybe he figured, yeah. Well, I'll just add, now I'll have two Mr. America titles.
Right, right.
That would make sense. I mean, I can understand that, you know. But, I mean...
You beat out Pete Caputo, too, who was your training partner. Right?
Yeah, Pete Caputo was my trainer. In fact, I trained with Pete Caputo for that contest. Mm-hmm. We both trained while he was getting ready for that show.
Did you know Chuck Fautz? Is that how you say his name? F-A-U-T-Z? He was competing quite a few IFBB.
Charles Chuck Fautz. Yeah, I know him very well.
Oh, really? Okay.
He was originally from New Jersey, came out to California, trained at Vince's gym, right? Okay. And, you know, he won quite a few shows. He had great abs.
Yeah.
Great upper body. His legs were, you know, not that great, but he had a great upper body. Now Chuck is still around. You know, it's funny because when I knew him when we were younger, we didn't talk much at all. You know, when I'd see him at Vince's gym and stuff, you know,
mm-hmm.
No reason, there wasn't any argument or anything. He just didn't seem very friendly.
Yeah.
Later on, though, I got in a talk with him at one of the Muscle Beach shows. Now, of course, he's a much older guy, and he's a very friendly guy. I mean, he was much, we talked about the old days, you know.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy, it turns out. And what he did is the story I heard, I don't know the exact details, is he invested in real estate and became actually quite successful financially.
Wow, good for him.
He's actually in his senior years, he's one of those guys that's pretty well off financially, doesn't have to worry about anything.
Wow, you know? That's awesome.
He did quite well, yeah.
Wow.
He's one of those quiet kind of, he was a smart guy though.
Yeah.
When you get to talk to him, you realize that Chuck Fautz, Charles Fautz is a smart guy.
Definitely. He was in a lot of magazines back then too.
A lot of magazines, yeah, covers, you know.
Yeah.
Weider used him in a lot of, you know, pictures and stuff. He had a good look, you know, had blonde hair.
Yeah.
You know, and he came out to California, got the California look, so to speak, you know.
I've got an old muscle builder where he's on the cover.
Yeah, he did a couple of beach shots with Frank Zane and Arnold and those guys.
Yeah.
Weider. Yeah. Yeah, that was Chuck Fautz.
So Ken Waller won the tall class. He beat out Art Peacock, who went on to I think he's still competing.
Art Peacock is still around. Yeah, Art Peacock. Wow. Because, you know, he's got to be like close to like 80, 9 years old.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Plus John, when I knew him in the 60s, I mean, it's scary to think about. He was like 40 years old back then.
Wow.
He's got to be like 89, 90 years old.
I don't know if he's still competing, but I think he competed just a few years ago. I remember.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
He did. Art Peacock was in the early 60s. I'm sorry, the late 60s was one of the top guys in California.
Yeah.
He won a lot of California shows. He was, you know, good legs, pretty good upper body. I vaguely remember him being from either England, some other country. I don't know exactly where.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, he had a kind of an accent. But I competed against him. Of course, he beat me also. You know, remember, though, I competed clean, though. That's all.
I'm not
going to cast aspersions. All these guys that beat me, they were not clean. So I'm not saying I would have beat them if I took anything, but I was on nothing except liver tablets. So I wasn't on the same playing field as these guys.
Right.
No excuses. I'm just stating a fact.
Yeah.
So Art Peacock did win quite a few. In fact, in Gold's Gym today, if you go in one of the restrooms, there's a big photo, a group photo. It was taken in 1969.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it has Arnold. It has Franco, Frank Zane, Dave Draper. There's who else? Oh, God. What's the name of that guy from Vince's Gym? Steve Reno, his name was. Zabo's wife, Lydia, who's very active on Facebook.
Lydia Tack, yeah.
So many of the great body. There's a photographer at the end named Ramon Garcia, who's standing on the far right. He took photos of me and Paul Hill, a guy named Paul Hill, who won the USA and a couple other shows.
Yeah.
Up in the Hollywood Hills. And at the far left, there's Art, you can only see half his body, is Art Peacock.
Oh, okay.
That was taken in 1969.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, and Joe Nista's in the middle of the, remember Joe Nista?
Yeah.
He's in the middle. He had just competed. The photo was taken right after a contest. And I believe Joe was the only guy in the photo who had actually competed. So he was wearing a warm-up jacket. And he had a very deep tan.
Okay.
He's the only guy in the photo that had a deep tan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don Peters was third. So that Art Peacock did good beating Don Peters because Don Peters did really well back then.
Don Peters is another guy from Vince's Gym. Tall, good-looking guy, nice guy.
Yeah.
He worked in those days as a film editor. He had a film editing job.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I had a very pretty wife, I remember. And interesting story, Don Peters and I appeared in a movie together. You know, they called up the gym. They wanted a couple of bodybuilders for a scene in a movie that was going to be shot in the, believe it or not, the Pasadena Art Museum in Pasadena, California.
Okay.
None of us knew what it was. I knew Don Peters. At that time, I was already trained. This was 1974. Yeah, 74. I was already training at Gold. I was at Gold's Gym, but I had known Don when I was at Vince's Gym back in 69.
Okay.
I showed up and there he was. Hey, Don, how you doing? You know, we're talking this and that, you know, and there was two other guys who I didn't know very well, but I kind of hung out with Don because I knew him. And they put us in this little room and, you know, and we're waiting and like 3 hours go by and I'm getting very restless because they're not giving us any food. You know, remember, we were all hardcore. But Don was training for the Mr. America.
Wow.
You know, so, and he was just, you know, he was relaxed, but I was getting antsy. So one of the assistant directors walks in and I say, hey, buddy, listen, we've been sitting here for hours. What's going on, man? When are we going to be used? You know, because, you know, we were only getting paid. I think it was either something like $75, I think it was for the day. Right.
Okay.
So I remember saying right before the guy walked in, I said to Don, I said, you know what? I said, if they don't use this suit, I'm getting out of here because it's not worth it to sit here all day for $75. I'm cutting out. And Don just shrugged, you know. So then the assistant DA walks in and he says, and I said, hey, buddy, are you going to use us or what? I mean, come on. You know, we've been here 4 hours.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do anyway? So he says, you're going to be masseurs giving massages to gorgeous women. And I turned to Don Peters and I said, you know what? I don't have anything else to do today. Don Peters, everybody in the room, even the assistant director, cracked up. And what I didn't know at the time, it was a funny story, because sure enough, about a half hour later, they brought us out. They had these massage tables set up in the middle of this museum, right? This
wow.
Museum. And I remember we wore a white tank top, white shorts. So did Don Peters. I was almost embarrassed because, I mean, I was competing, but I'm standing next to a Mr. America competitor.
Yeah.
And he was looked a lot better than I did, you know. So unfortunately, he was at the next massage table. So I was more or less right next to him, but I didn't care, you know. So we're standing there now by these massage tables. And again, another half hour goes by. There's nothing going on. We're standing there. So then these women come out in bathrobes and they, you know, and they're getting ready to shoot the scene. And a couple of guys walk out too, also in bathrobes. And they're just sitting on the tables and we're standing next to the tables. So I'm looking at my table and there's nobody there. And I said, and I called over the one of the crew guys. I said, I don't understand. There's no, this is before they had the CGI,
Yeah.
I said, there's nobody here. I mean, what am I supposed to do? He said, oh, you'll be giving a massage to the female lead. She's doing a scene right now at a closed set with David Carradine, who was the star of the movie. It was called Death Race 2000. Was it?
Oh, I remember that movie. Yeah.
Right. So about 5 minutes later, again, most of the women were sitting there in bathrobes. My girl walks out and she's also has a bathrobe. So this is the funny story. They had a guy at that time who was the leading DJ in Los Angeles, the number one DJ in Los Angeles, was named the Real Don Steele. And he was acting like a sports announcer because it's supposed to be a competition.
Okay.
Death Race involved the more people you could kill by running down with the car. That's who wins. And he was supposed to be the guy who did the commentating.
Yeah.
He was on the set. And this is a funny story. So the girls are all sitting there in the bathrobes. My girl walks out and the director says, okay, get ready to shoot. And we're standing and suddenly all the women stand up. And, they take off the bathrobes. I figured they're going to have bikinis on or they didn't have anything on at all.
Wow.
And I remember this girl lies down on my table and she had the most gorgeous body, like right out of Playboy. And Real Don Steele told me later, he says that he cracked up when he looked at my face because he says I was like this when she took it. And I just froze because in those days I was very shy.
Yeah.
Nobody told me that they'd be nude. I had no idea. Right. So anyway, to make a long story short. So, we had to act like we're massaging these girls and I'm getting worried that I'm going to get excited and embarrass myself or something like that, but, in the meantime, they had to stop the scene for a second to adjust the cameras. And so, this guy walks up to the girl, remember she was beautiful.
Yeah.
This girl went on to do a show with Tom Hanks called Bosom Buddies, like a couple of years later.
Okay.
Very gorgeous girl. In fact, I saw a photo of, I looked her up not long ago. She's like in her 70s and she's still gorgeous, right?
Wow.
So this guy tries to pick her up. He walks up. One of the guys in the movie walks up and is trying to pick her up. And I'm listening to the guy and I'm thinking, who is this jerk? He's talking like out of one side, talking like this. And I'm thinking this girl's going to tell him to get lost any second. And she's trying to be friendly with him because he was like the bad guy in the movie.
What I mean?
She's trying to like give him the hints like I'm not interested. He's not getting it though. He keeps on trying to come on with her. So he walked over and I sat next to him. I kind of felt sorry for him. So I tried to act like I was an actor and I said, hey, what work have you done? I've done a couple of small movies. He's going like this. And I remember looking at him saying, buddy, I said, I'm not really a professional actor, but the one thing I know, I have friends who are actors. I said, this is a tough business. I said, my advice to you, I don't know you. I'm not trying to, be critical, but you might want to think about, doing something else, getting something on the side. Because, and I didn't want to say that he was deformed because he spoke that at once. And it was a weird guy. I'll take my chances, but thanks for the advice, he goes, right? And I remember, and I said, well, what's your name? Sylvester Stallone. And I remember a year later, I was at a newsstand and they had what they called the trades, Hollywood Reporter and Variety. And they had movies in production. And I looked at it and there was a movie called Rocky. And I looked at the star, Sylvester Stallone. I'm thinking, how did that knucklehead get a part in the movie? And I remember being astounded.
Yeah.
And that's the funny thing. I told Sylvester Stallone to get another job.
Yeah.
And not long before that, I was having lunch with Arnold, and Arnold had just started out in movies himself. He had a couple of extra jobs.
Yeah.
And I said the same thing to him. I said, listen, Arnold, let me tell you, as a friend, I said, if you're the greatest bodybuilder, I said, but I don't know how far you can get to be as an actor. You're a big guy. You got that accent, Arnold Schwarzenegger. I said, the only roles you're going to get are these kind of leg breaker thing. Because in the movie, he got a job. He played like a guy who was a leg breaker, a tough guy who then had no lines.
Right.
I said, that's the only jobs you'll probably get. I said, do something else. Don't concentrate on acting. He says, well, I thank you for your advice, Jerry, but I know I have nothing to lose. I'll give it a shot because, because, you know, so you could say that I told Arnold Schwarzenegger
and Sylvester Stallone
that they had no chance of becoming movie stars.
Right.
All I could say is, I wish I had that kind of foresight for the, you know, for the state lotteries or something. Like
right.
That. I'm probably the only guy in history that told these two guys that.
Oh man, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
And when you said Death Race 2000, I remember Stallone was in that. He had a small part. Yeah.
That's right. He played Machine Gun something or other.
Yeah.
He played the heavy in the movie.
He was in some really small roles, some really bad movies.
Yeah.
He really made it. Yeah.
He was another movie called Capone. He did a Kojak TV show. You know,
did a Woody Allen movie, I think.
He did a Woody Allen movie. He played a guy who mugged Woody Allen. On
yeah.
Right. Yeah. He had Lords of Flatbush was one of his first big movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he didn't get along with Henry Winkler, who was also in the movie, but.
Yeah. I saw an interview with him. I think it was in England when he went right when Rocky came out, you know, before it was even big.
Yeah.
And, they go, well, you were in movies before. He goes, well, that's an exaggeration. He goes, I was usually the bum that the guy had to walk over.
But, you know, at one point he was so broke, he was sleeping in the Port Authority terminal in New York in Manhattan.
Yeah,
he was so broke he took a part in a porno movie.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
It was called Party at Kitty's or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And
when he became a movie star, get this: somebody dug up the old porno movie, and they tried to blackmail Stallone and say we're gonna release this movie of you.
Yeah,
you know, unless you pay us some millions of dollars, whatever. So Stallone said, "Go ahead, I don't care." So they released it, and it had no effect on him at all.
No, I remember that, yeah.
He was so big. He'd already done a couple of Rocky movies. He was so beloved by then, nobody gave a crap about him doing porno movies.
Because
he explained the story.
Yeah.
He said, I had absolutely no money, and I was sleeping on a bench in the Port Authority.
Yeah.
And 9 out of 10 guys would not, you know, it would not fault him for taking the money. You know?
Right.
So that's what happened there, yeah.
Well, getting back to the contest, Ken Waller won that show. He won the IFBB Mr. America, and I'm assuming Boyer was probably second. Ed Corney, I said, won the short class. So Boyer won best arms. Ken won best legs. Chuck Colorist won best back and best abs.
Yeah.
And Boyer won best chest. And Ed Corney, of course, won best poser.
Oh, yeah.
And Chuck Colorist won most muscular, and they had a most symmetrical, and Ed Corney won that.
Right.
And then they also had another show with it called the Mr. Western America, which Ed Corney won.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that was on the same night?
Yeah, the same night, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, Chuck Colorist, they used to call him the gopher. You know, that was...
Yeah.
Joe Gold's nickname for him, because I guess he thought he looked like a gopher. You know, he was a short little guy. He used to work again in the with the studios off season.
Yeah,
they filmed for about 6-7 months out of the year. And during that time, like a lot of other bodybuilders that era, he wouldn't train. All he would do is work in the studio. He wouldn't even come to the gym.
Yeah,
and then he'd show up at the gym towards the summer when the movie season ended. He'd show up at the gym out of shape again, just like Danny Padilla, a little fat guy.
Yeah.
Just a pudgy little guy with a pot belly, you know. And then just again, like Danny Padilla, you know, he trained for like the AU American, the one the shows you're talking about. And within maybe 2 months, he'd be shredded and he'd have his abs were so deep that you couldn't believe your eyes when you like no fat at all.
Yeah.
But he wasn't a big guy, you know, and small legs and stuff, but extremely muscular. And I remember asking him, I said, Chuck, how do you get so ripped like that? Same answer. That what's his name again? The guy we were talking about earlier, the muscular guy?
Joe Means.
He says, I cut carbohydrates completely out of my diet.
Yeah, that seemed like that was the way to go back then.
Yeah.
You just cut their carbs back. Yeah.
A lot of guys did that back then. There was another guy named, I think I might have mentioned him before. I can't remember his name. Ron something or other. Ron Margulies or something like that.
Okay.
They used to call him the Praying Mantis because he did this pose, this weird.
Oh, you told me about him, yeah.
Yeah, and he was just pure definition.
Yeah.
That had no muscle thickness anywhere, but just shredded upon shredded. Chris Dickinson competed against him and told me about him. He said, you see this guy in person, he looked like an anatomy chart. He said, even standing there, you could see every triation in his deltoid. He said he'd move his arm, all the bicep things would jump up and down.
Yeah.
Said, this guy looked, I mean, he looked like he was 1% fat, if that's possible, he goes. and it turns out Ron Marg, his secret was living on only tuna fish and water. That's it.
God.
That's all the man ate.
Yeah.
And I remember saying, you know, when I found this out, I said, Chris, if it takes that to get that ripped, I guess I'll never be
ripped. Right.
I said, to live on tuna and water.
I think you would lose so much muscle too, you know?
Well, he didn't have much muscle. That's the thing. It looked like he had 16-inch arms.
Because you got no carbs, no fat. You got nothing. Nothing to fuel your body.
This guy just was pure muscle definition, but no thickness anywhere. No muscle mass. I mean, just imagine a skinny, you kind of like it was muscle, but no sweep to the thighs. You know, the calves were very cut, but no roundness, no thickness, just pure muscle definition. That's it.
Yeah.
Probably one of the most purely defined guys ever.
Wow.
Although there's a guy now, they put him on Facebook. I guess he's a European guy. I forgot. I don't know his name, but you might have seen this guy. This picture's of him. He looks like a human anatomy chart.
Yeah, I think I have seen those pictures.
And this guy's like about 6'3". He's tall.
Yeah.
Again, not very big, but just shredded beyond belief, this guy.
Yeah.
And I also saw him interviewed, and they said, well, how do you get this definition? Like, nobody has it like you.
Yeah.
He says, I don't do anything special. He says, I eat a normal diet. He says, I don't cut out carbohydrates. I just train the normal way. 8 to 10 reps, and we said nothing.
He says it
must be just genetics. He says, the guy was honest. He says, I don't do anything special at all. He said that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when you see him do chins, the back, he's got striations all over his back. It's scary looking.
Wow.
I mean, you know, that's genetic.
Yeah, genetic. Yeah. I remember I did a teenage show. I competed a lot as a teenager.
Yeah.
And they would call up like, four or five guys. And you never really knew how you compared with anybody because, you know, you're up on stage with them and stuff.
Sure.
And I remember we were doing comparisons and the crowd was cheering for this guy to my right. And he was a little skinny guy. Right. So when this prejudging ended and I got dressed, I went out to the audience. I met my brother and my friends from the gym. I go, why the hell were they cheering for that guy? The guy, oh, he was so ripped. You wouldn't have believed it. You know, I go, him? I go, the guy was like 150 pounds, you know?
Right. He probably looked really shredded under the lights and everything.
Yeah, he did. He did. You would never think it looking at him, but, you know, when he hit the poses, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, Frank Zane used that technique too, you know?
Yeah.
He'd get really hard and he presented himself in a way, especially under the lights.
Yeah.
Where he looked a lot bigger than if you saw him under plain lighting right in front of you. I mean, he wouldn't look nearly as big.
You know,
it's almost like an illusion effect, you know?
Well, listen to the list of judges at this IFBB Mr. America, Jerry. Bill Pearl, Larry Scott, Zabel Kwaszewski, Ernie Phillips, Eddie Sylvester, the promoter of Mr. International, Russ Warner, Seymour Koenig, Arnold, and Dick Tyler.
That's what you call a real all-star panel.
That's the judging panel, yeah.
That's got to be one of the most impressive judging panels ever. I mean,
isn't that crazy?
Bill Pearl, geez.
Bill Pearl and Larry Scott.
And Larry Scott, wow.
Yeah. And they said Arnold and Franco both did a posing routine at night. And then they did a dual posing routine. They said that was probably the first time they ever did it. They said, let's get them out together. And they did it together.
Wow.
And Franco did his powerlifting act. He's deadlifted 700 pounds for reps.
Yeah, I've never seen photos of that. I saw photos of that. Yeah.
And Dave Dupree went up there with them, and they were benching together, and I think they did like 455.
Yeah. Dave Dupree is an old friend of mine. Yeah.
Well, before we get to the big show, which was the NABBA Universe and the Mr. Olympia, I want to talk about the IFBB Mr. World Contest, which, again, that used to be held with the Olympia and all that stuff on the same night, but they didn't hold it that night. So they had it. Let's see where it was. So they had the Mr. World and Mr. USA together. Mm-hmm. And Franco won the Mr. World. Now, Franco lost to Mr. World the year before to Dave Draper. Remember Dave Draper, Rick Wayne, and Franco were all in it, and that was the same night as the Mr. Olympia. And Franco wins the Mr. World then the year later. And let me see where it was at.
New York, wasn't it?
I think it was L.A. again.
Oh, L.A.? Oh.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, no, it was at L.A.
It was? Okay.
Yeah, I remember now. I think it might have been at the Embassy Auditorium in downtown L.A.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did you go to that one? No?
No, but I remember the background. I remember recognizing it as the Embassy because I competed in that auditorium a couple of times.
Yeah.
The old Embassy, that's where they used to hold the big bodybuilding shows in the late 60s, early 70s.
Well, it doesn't sound like the Mr. World had a big lineup with a lot of names. Let's see. Franco won the short class. Some guy from Japan. Sagatu Takamoto was in second. And Courtney Brown from Trinidad was in third. And then Steve Burnett from Trinidad won the medium class.
Right.
Franklin Green. Well, I remember him.
I remember
he was from Trinidad. He was second. And Elliot Gilchrist from Grenada was in third.
I remember Elliot Gilchrist, too.
Yeah, I did, too. I remember that name.
Very thick and vascular. Thick, vascular black guy. Yeah.
But Dennis Tinerino won the tall class.
Oh, he did.
And Vic Downs was from Canada, was in second.
Vic Downs, who you interviewed, yeah.
Yeah. And it was weird. They gave a most muscular award for each class. So Franco won the most muscular in the short class. Elliot Gilchrist won the medium class, yes. And then Vic Downs won the most muscular in the tall class.
Right.
And then Franco won best arms.
That's weird.
Yeah, he's always criticized for his arms. He won best arms. He won best back, best chest, best legs, and best poser.
Wow.
And Vic Downs won best abdominals. Dennis Tinerino didn't win any body part awards.
Well, I'm surprised. Franco winning best legs?
That's best legs, thing. Yeah, and best arms.
Franco was not known for his legs.
No. But he was in peak condition back then, though, 71. Yeah, when he was really coming into his own.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So Ed Corney, he won his class at the IFBB Mr. America. He wins the overall Mr. USA. He beats Leon Brown in the short class. And Johnny Maldonado from New York won the medium class.
Right.
And Harold Poole won the tall class. So,
Harold Poole.
So Ed Corney beat out Harold Poole.
Wow. I didn't realize that. Wow.
And Chuck Fouts was in second in the tall class.
Yeah. Leon Brown just passed away recently.
Yeah. Last year. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just passed away.
So Ed Corney won best arms. Harold Poole won best back and best chest. Ed Corney won best legs. Charles Fultz won best abdominals, and Ed Corney, of course, won best poser.
So, right.
So I remember Ed Corney talking about that contest because he said that was the first time two little guys won the overall. So him and Franco both won two major titles,
right. And
they both won the overall. So that was probably a big contest for Ed Corney because that was the one that kind of launched him, you know, where people knew about him then, you know.
Right. What was I going to say again?
And I guess Harold Poole is coming back. Yeah, that was his comeback.
Oh, that was his comeback? Yeah.
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 Probably since the 60s when he was taking second to Larry Scott, right?
Yeah, that was 66. Was he? I guess he came back that year, 71, yeah.
Yeah, 5 years later.
Yeah. And you say, did he win the tall class, Harold?
Yeah, he won the tall class, but he lost to Ed Corney.
So Harold beat Dennis Tinerino then? Or was it a different show?
That was a different show. That was Dennis Tinerino was in the Mr. World.
And then the Dennis...
Franco won that one.
But did Dennis win in the tall class or no? Or was it?
Yeah, he won the tall class, yeah.
He did win the tall class, okay.
Yeah. All right, thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring this episode of the show. And thank you again to our Patreon donors, who sponsor every episode of the show by their donations. And if you would like to become a Patreon donor yourself, you can do that by just going to our official website, which is bodybuildinglegendshow.com, and you'll see the Patreon link in the upper right-hand corner. All right. Man, I am still shocked about the news about Chris Dickerson. That is terrible. Chris was, I believe the fifth Mr. Olympia to pass away. Isn't it amazing that we lost both Sean Roden and Chris Dickerson in the same year. I was kind of expecting Chris to leave us one of these days because I know he wasn't doing well and he's living in that nursing home. But Chris was a great guy, and I'm glad we had the opportunity to talk to him several times on the show. He was a real gentleman, the first African-American Mr. America winner in 1970, and he was the oldest Mr. Olympia winner until Sean Roden won. Sean was a couple months older than Chris. Chris was 43 years old when he won the Mr. Olympia. So rest in peace, Chris Dickerson. Bad news right before the holidays, but he lived a long life and he inspired many people. And he was really a great bodybuilder and also a great commentator on bodybuilding for ESPN. When ESPN used to cover all the bodybuilding competitions, Chris commentated on the Pro World Championships, which later became the Arnold Classic. And he commentated on many Mr. Olympia competitions and Mr. Universe competitions. And he had such a great voice and a great knowledge of the sport. He was really a great person to promote bodybuilding. And he was so well-spoken and such a gentleman. And we will miss him. So, unfortunately, we have lost Chris Dickerson, one of our top champions, for sure, a real legend in the sport. All right, guys, so let me read this article for you. I do this every week on the show. This is from, as I said, the June 1972 issue of Muscle Builder Magazine, and it was about the 1971 Mr. World, Mr. USA show that we just talked about with Jerry Brandt. It's called Franco Colombo Demolishes the Star-Studded Field to Win the First Mr. World Crown, an Ed Corney surprise but popular winner in the Mr. USA, and it was actually written by Mike Katz. It says they said it couldn't be done, but they were wrong. They said no one could organize a world-class contest in 2 weeks, present it in the proper IFBB extravagant manner, attract a big audience and dozens of top entrants, and generally run a superb show. But Tom Minichiello did not believe them. He said it could be done, and he did it. In fact, it was the best Mr. World, Mr. USA pageant ever produced, and here's how it happened. Early last year, in the aftermath of uprooting the Mr. Universe contest from its New York home base and moving it to Paris, the classic Mr. World show was overlooked. IFBB directors thought most high-powered competition would be in Europe and unable to afford additional fare to America, so plans for the Mr. World were only vaguely formed and then dropped. Likewise, the traditional West Coast Mr. USA event was mothballed when the Mr. America migrated to Los Angeles. It was figured few competitors would peak for two national ranking shows in the same time span. Then suddenly it was late August and the IFBB schedule makers were caught with their pants down. Dozens of internationalists weren't going to Paris and dozens of Eastern greats weren't going to California. Maybe their jobs or families prohibited an extended trip, but they were hollering for the perennial IFBB New York Spectacular in September. Most, though they consciously recognized it was happening, could hardly believe the magnificent Mr. America, Mr. Universe, etc. gala had deserted them for muscle-starved climbs elsewhere. In absolute top shape and with no quality contest to enter, they besieged the IFBB New York headquarters and pleaded for action. But even Joe Weider was despondent. He was more than willing to fund a big operation, but who could find an auditorium, pack full entry cards, arrange publicity and promotion, staff the judges, book acts, and so on in only 2 weeks? For if the show wasn't held prior to the Mr. Universe, it would never get off the ground. Joe and Ben Weider, along with other top IFBB brass, would be in Europe, and arrangements would be totally unmanageable without some authority around to pay the freight. In desperation, Federation eyes turned to Tom Minichiello, spiritual leader of the Mid-City Health Club and the IFBB New York director. "Tom," they begged, "get us a show, somehow, some way, anyway, make it happen." Tom abandoned his trainees on August 28th, and he went into seclusion for 4 days. On September 2nd, he returned to make an announcement of historic proportions to IFBB aficionados. "The show will be." And so it was. Through his numerous friends, Tom had reached state senator Anthony Geoffrey, and New Rochelle, New York Mayor Frank Giretto. Through them, he negotiated rental of the mammoth White Plains County Center, chief sports facility of New York's prestigious Westchester County. Tom also arranged newspaper publicity and other media promotion, ticket printing, the mailing and telegramming of entry blanks, and the thousands of other deeds necessary to make the show a reality. Suddenly, New York, the East Coast, Canada, and the Caribbean became the buzz of bodybuilding activity. Rumors spread like mad. Harold Poole's coming back. Dennis Tinerino is an IFBB show. Johnny Binicelli in great shape said after a five-year layoff. Some even said the mighty Columbo might be disqualified from the Mr. Universe show and he entered the Mr. World instead. Amazingly enough, all the rumors came true. For on September 12, 1971, 2,000 thrilled, muscle-crazed fans saw a show rivaling the Mr. Universe event in both quality and splendor and arranged on but for 2 weeks' notice. Tom Minicello, IFBB hero extraordinaire, sat in the wings modestly, but it was all his doing, and this contest report is dedicated to him. Without Tom, there would have been no festivities at all. The caliber of the Mr. World contestants was unusually high, but Franco Colombo overpowered everybody to win the crown by a substantial margin. He also took all the body part awards except for abs. Colombo is absolutely fantastic, and he is in the same rarefied atmosphere of bodybuilding preeminence as Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sergio Oliva. A great Pose Town 3 among this fantastic trio was expected by the Mr. Universe crowd, but it came to no avail when both Colombo and Oliva were disqualified from IFBB competition for 1971 and part of 1972 for entering unsanctioned contests. Colombo is not less than the third best-built man alive, and the crowd and judges knew it straight off. Naturally, Colombo was the short class winner, and improving Shogaru Takamoto, who flew all the way from Japan, took the silver medal. Courtney Brown, the first of several Trinidadian medalists, finished third. And to add to his baggage problems, Colombo picked up the most muscular prize, too. Consistent internationalist Steve Burnett from Trinidad was numero uno in the medium class, with countryman Franklin Green second, and Mr. Vane's Elliot Gilchrist of Grenada third. Gilchrist easily picked up the most muscular award, and at age 40 is surely one of the very best-built veterans in bodybuilding history. The tall class served as a showcase mini-contest as Dennis Tinerino, fed up with AAU body bungling, came out of the closet and into an IFBB meet, and he edged out Canada's Vic Downs. Downs did all right for himself, however. He got most muscular and overall best abdominals and enthusiastic audience support. Trinidad scored again when Hollis Keller picked up third place. Greedy Colombo, not content with seven trophies for muscular supremacy, had to make it eight by charming the best poser Trey away from the judges. So it was quite a day for the little Italian, who was almost as broad as he is tall. Ed Cordy had his work cut out for him in the Mr. USA finale as Harold Poole, bigger than life but a little soft, and Charlie Fox fought him point for point and pose for pose through prejudging and before the audience. Ed beat Leon Brown and comeback sensation John Binney Acculi for the short class top spot. He is an exceptionally handsome and tight-muscled newcomer, and Joe Weider predicts that with more and proper training, Ed can crack the Sergio Arnold Franco stranglehold on Musclegum's richest honors. This night, there was no disputing his divisional victory or most muscular acclamation. John Maldonado from the Mid-City Health Club slipped by two other members, Gordon Babb and Doug Lowinger, for the medium class gold. Babb is coming on strong, though, and bested Maldonado at Johnny's specialty, most muscular. The tall class held a pleasant surprise as the Mr. America, Mr. Universe, and the last man to beat Larry Scott, Harold Poole, returned to the wars after a lapse of several years. Harold had more size than ever, and his trademark muscular density was absent. 10 or 15 pounds less, and Harold might have gone all the way, but weakened definition frustrated his reemergence. Charlie Fawkes finished second to Poole, coming off much more solid and grabbed most muscular. Wendell Brambenhouse was in third. Corny, who amazingly enough was just another anonymous muscle guy a year before, carried off best arms on a split decision and best legs. Poole charged back to notch best back and chest. All that was left for Fawkes was best abs, which he certainly deserved. Corny was also the best poser, of course. The award ceremony marked a high-water point in IFBB history. It was the first time high-ranking politicians joined federation's leaders. Joe Weider made the presentations, and the victors on the podium. Senator Geoffrey and Mayor Garretto were just as enthused as Corny and Colombo at the show's exciting conclusion. Unlike the Mr. Universe situation, where temporary judging errors riled the crowd, this audience was well pleased with the awards, and Colombo and Corny proved to be among the most popular bodybuilders. Each had come some distance to enter, and their expenses were picked up by IFBB headquarters, So was their trip to Paris a week later. This was done to help promote the show, guaranteeing fans a fair shake and the promoters a chance to fill the hall, as well as afford leading stars a chance to earn their due recognition. Tom Minichiello's efforts were so outstanding in getting this badly needed Eastern show together in but 2 weeks that he was awarded IFBB contracts to conduct 5 shows in 1972. This is the most confidence the Federation has ever shown in any director, for to package even a single pageant successfully is always a tall order. Yet there is little doubt Tom will do it based on his wonderful 1971 IFBB Mr. World, Mr. USA performance. And the final results was in the short class of the Mr. World, 1971. Franco was the winner in the short class. Sagato Takamoto, second from Japan. And Courtney Brown from Trinidad was in third. And then in the medium class, Steve Burnett from Trinidad was first. Franklin Green from Trinidad was second. Elliot Gilchrist from Grenada was third. And in the tall class, Dennis Tenorino from the USA was first. Vic Downs from Canada, second. Hollis Keller from Trinidad was third. And then in the body part awards, Franco won best arms, best back, best chest, best legs, and best poser. And Vic Downs won best abdominals. And then in the Mr. USA contest, Ed Corney was the winner in the short class. Leon Brown, second. John Bianaculli in third. In the medium class, John Maldonado was first. Gordon Babb, second. Doug Lowinger was third. And in the tall class, Harold Poole was first, Charlie Fouts second, and Wendell Rambrahaus was in third. Most muscular went to Charlie Fouts. Ed Corney won best arms, best legs, and best poser. Harold Poole won best back and best chest, and best abdominals went to Charlie Fouts. All right, guys, that is our show. Again, rest in peace, Chris Dickerson. I'm still in shock from hearing that news. I just got the news a couple minutes ago, and another great legend has left us. It's kind of sad because I remember like 2 years ago, Ed Corney died, I believe, on January 1st. And was it 2 years ago or a year ago? We lost Franco Colombo toward the end of the year. So it seems like this time of the year, we're losing our legends. Rest in peace, Chris Dickerson, Mr. Olympia, Mr. Universe, Mr. America, a true legend in the sport. And now I believe the fifth Mr. Olympia to pass away. We've lost Larry Scott, Franco, Sergio Oliva. We lost Sean Roden just like a month ago. And now we've lost Chris Dickerson. So maybe I will rerun one of our interviews with Chris. Maybe I'll put that on my Facebook page so you guys can check that out. If you want to check out my Bodybuilding Legends Show website, we have all of our interviews on there. So you can see all the interviews we did with Chris. And we'll probably do a special tribute show for Chris. He definitely deserves it. So rest in peace, Chris Dickerson, and I hope you guys have a great Christmas, and we will see you next week. Take care.